Welcome to the PreparedX Podcast, your complete source for crisis, emergency, business continuity, and security preparedness interviews, news, and much more. Now, your host. He creates chaos for a living, Rob Burton.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 34 of the PreparedX podcast. In this podcast, I interview Charles Skinner, the regional director of Sub-Sahara Africa, and he works for Janus Global Operations. I met Charles a few years ago in Dubai through mutual business contacts and also through his organization. The audio in this one was not great. He was calling in from, I believe he was in Nigeria at the time of the call. And so it's a little bit muffled, but it's perfectly fine. So hang on in there for the interview. It's very good information. I think you'll find it an enjoyable podcast. We spoke about a number of travel safety and security related topics, some of the common issues that organizations and non-government organizations have when they send their workers into foreign or unfamiliar environments. We spoke about other specific challenges that organizations face, the importance of scenario planning as an individual and as an organization, as well as situational awareness. Anyway, here's episode 34 and my interview with Charles Skinner. Well, good morning from the East Coast of the US, Charles. I know you're in Africa and in Nigeria. How are you doing today?
Not too bad at all, thank you very much, Rob. I'm in Lagos, and the weather is pleasantly cool for now. So I'm actually enjoying a little break from the hot, muggy weather.
Nice. Well, we just finally got some hot, muggy weather here in the northeast of the US, so it's been a long time coming, though. Just for our audience, just before we get started with the interview, Charles, just for a few minutes, could you talk about, how you managed to get there to Africa? But I know you work predominantly all over the Middle East and Africa. But talk for a few minutes about your career, please.
Yes. So, Rob, I was born and bred in what was Northern Rhodesia, and my formative years were spent over there. I then joined the British Army for about 25 years. And then from there, I moved into security pretty quickly. And it was Janusian at the time,
yes.
Now called Janus. So from about 2003 to date, I've been with the company. There was a short break in between where I was working with BAE Systems for their land and armaments. I was the market creation director for Africa. So I'm constantly being taken back home, if I may, and thoroughly at home in Africa, albeit I have to say that there are certain areas of Africa which are completely different culturally, geographically to the others. So when some people look at Africa, you can't look at it in just one whole body. You have to actually break it down. And it's very much similar to the security risks are different from one country to another.
Sure. Well, that leads us straight into the first question, really. I know, in the build-up to this podcast, I reached out to you to see if you'd be interested in talking about security and as it relates to travel and other various risks within the continent and beyond, based on your experience. So I appreciate you taking the time today. What's one of the most important elements of crisis management as it relates to securing employees that work in unfamiliar and challenging environments, in your experience?
So having been involved in training an awful lot of people around the world in travel safety, I think the most common one has to be, and in particular here in Africa, is overcoming complacency and indeed apathy. And quite often, there's two types of people in their extremes. There are those who are complacent and apathetic about the situation, and then there are those who live in fear of a crime. And those tend to be in the minority. those in the majority tend to believe that sort of bad things only happen to other people.
Right.
And they always believe that, you know, things have, you know, they've been fine up till now, so why should things all of a sudden change, you know? And yes, I've been through God knows how many coups or, you know, and I've survived. They think that their knowledge and skills will take them through whatever problems occur. And they develop a sense of indifference and a lack of concern for their own safety. And I think that that particular person is going to be the challenge for any security manager in a company, and has to sort of weed them out and place them in an area which is relatively safe because they're difficult to handle.
Right. And in, as it relates to Africa then, because of your vast experience out there, what are some of the travel security concerns for these security managers? And do they vary from one country to the next within Africa?
I've thought about this sort of thing long and hard. I suppose that if you take driving as a given issue, no matter where you go in Africa or indeed the Middle East, I suppose you could group the the threats into four areas: civil unrest, and definitely civil unrest because, you know, during election time, public holidays, certain public holidays, especially if they're celebrating, let's say, Independence Day, depending on who you are, where you're from, that might not be a good time to actually visit the country. People do tend to get extremely emotional. And civil unrest, if you're wrong place, wrong time, and indeed you should avoid traveling to that country, that can be a huge issue for a lot of people. Crime, of course, you know, crime, I don't know any country here in Africa, probably with the exception of somewhere like Rwanda, where you can get off a plane, jump into a taxi, and get to your hotel safely without having been mugged or having your bag snatched or indeed someone trying to scan you. And you know, I'll give you an example of that just with an NGO here in Nigeria, in fact. And she was given a password and a name of the driver. And she also knew that the driver would know her name. And she was approached by a gentleman who had her name and password, but unfortunately for her, it wasn't her driver. So you can see it was an inside job. And she's a professional NGO. She's been out and about. You know, she knows the place very well. But she managed to get out of that situation, but it would have been, could end up in a kidnap. But this is a story that was passed on to me, and she's in actual fact one of our clients over here in Nigeria. So you know, you can see that these sort of crimes can actually lead to something far more serious, and indeed armed robberies. You know, that's something that is prevalent in a lot of places, even places like Ghana. The third, so that's civil unrest, crime. I'd say terrorism. Terrorism tends to be the one people focus on. But indeed, it is not as common. You actually have to travel to specific areas. So, for example, here in Nigeria, you'd have to go to the north, where Boko Haram are, or you'd have to actually travel down to the Delta, where you would have the likes of the Avengers and various other groups down there. But if you live sort of like Lagos, then it's a completely, you know, terrorism does not affect you. And indeed, in Abuja, it doesn't affect you. So it's very specific. And I wouldn't say that about some of the countries, and they tend to be the ones north of us in the Sahel. And finally, I'd say for the traveler, laws and culture, because the way people dress, their behavior, and indeed, you know, some of the basically the crimes, for example, drug offenses. In some countries, it depends what they describe as being a drug. So what you and I think would be a drug, so referring to heroin, cocaine, they might actually be talking about other pharmaceutical drugs which you require for your health. Some people do get caught up in that situation. Driving offenses, and I'd say finally, really, it's all about your behavior. And it is about not being in the streets, staying off the streets in many, many countries, even in Accra. You know, you can walk around some parts, which is perfectly safe, but at night that would not be safe. And I would say civil unrest, crime, terrorism, and laws and culture.
Sure.
Four things that one would focus on when traveling in Africa.
Sure. You mentioned NGOs there, and you know, some organizations have the resources, they have the funding available, especially the larger multinationals that have had programs, security programs for travelers in place for many years. But, you know, for the smaller organizations that maybe don't have those resources, you know, what kind of advice would you give them in terms of, you know, preparing their staff members to, you know, to travel, or if an individual is certainly traveling? You know, what kind of information would you give them in terms of, you know, advising them on what to prepare for?
Well, indeed, I would say mentally map out your trip by sort of walking yourself through your journey from beginning to end.
Right.
And then try to understand what is it you don't know and what you're not sure of. And there are some websites out there. I would say that probably the most useful one, and it's free, is going to be Smart Traveller, which is the Australian Government Travel Advice website. It's very easy to navigate. And what I like about it, it's very pragmatic. And they sort of give you a summary, sort of entry and exit, safety and security, local travel, laws, culture, health, weather, and where to get help from. And those are the key sort of things for a traveller to know and understand. And that costs absolutely nothing, that tool. It's free of charge. It takes a little bit of time to read through it. That's what I would say. And but particularly to mentally map out your whole trip, and even to the extent of just drafting it down and just finding out what is it you don't know, what do you need to know, and what is it you want to protect yourself from, so understand what the threats are.
Yeah, I think that's excellent advice, and we'll add that into the show notes at the bottom of this podcast afterwards. And you mentioned it was Safe Traveller from the Australian government.
Smart Traveller.
Sorry, yes. Okay, great. We'll add that in. Very good tip there. We appreciate that. In terms of preparing employees to operate in the Africas, what are the biggest challenges that organizations as a whole face? You know, you probably experienced this through your own clients, you know, coming into the Africas. You know, we advise any organization, any of our clients that are going to be operating in those environments to scenario plan. And that's not just the individual travelers and what they should do. I think we've spoken about that in the last 10 or 15 minutes here. But what about the organization? You know, how would they respond, and what can they do to, you know, prepare themselves for, you know, some kind of event, be it a large scale event or an individual, employee that may have an issue?
Well, I think the three biggest challenges that from an organization's point of view, what they face. The first one is definitely, and that is huge. And I mentioned corruption because that affects absolutely everything at every level. You know, no matter whether you're in Kenya, Nigeria, there are some countries, I will say, like Botswana, where it will not affect you. But I'm speaking now generally throughout Africa.
Sure.
And I would say that the second one would be the health and the lack of an appropriate response. So should you be caught up in a traffic accident, should you have some sort of serious ailment, what is it as an organization, the duty of care, how are they going to deal with that when there is not an appropriate response in country? And that is a big problem, and particularly here in Lagos. It's trying to get you from A to B, and you can't wait for an ambulance. So what do you do? How do you deal with that situation? And I think the final one would be sort of the lack of infrastructure, which sort of has a bearing on both of those. I mean, the lack of infrastructure is because the corruption, because there's not enough money to provide for roads, big hospitals, proper airports. You know, Abuja closed down for 3-4 months just recently, which is unheard of, having an international airport just closed down because the runway wasn't up to scratch. And so trying to, when you're in somewhere like South Sudan, and I was just thinking of the Chinese company up there, when they had to evacuate, the infrastructure was not there to allow them to move up to 300 people. So, yeah, that creates problems.
Sure.
Corruption, health, and the lack of appropriate response, and lack of infrastructure. Those are the biggest ones facing organizations these days.
Thank you. That's great. So in terms of, you know, your experience, do you find that organizations will practice country evacuation plans, or at least walk through the, you know, the kind of what ifs, I guess, in tabletop exercises? Do you find organizations go that far in terms of their preparedness?
I would say the short answer would be no. And I have to emphasize the fact that, you know, or caveat that by saying the organizations that I'm aware of, you know,
sure.
I'm sure
yep.
I have some people phoning me up and saying, hang on, we do.
Right, yeah.
But there are many companies who have the plans in place, and in fact, as part of their ISO so requirements, have an evacuation plan in place, crisis management plan in place. But the guardians of these plans are not able to find time to practice and often sort of don't have time themselves to dust them off because there's only one or two of them,
sure.
and they're dealing with day-to-day firefighting. So, for example, just checking the veracity of some of these emergency numbers, the routes, the safe houses. Is this plan still workable as of today? When did I last check it? You know, that is a big problem. And I think it's not actually the security manager per se or the HSSC manager. It's not their fault. It's just that, you know, this day and age is all about making money.
Right.
And they say, no, this is terribly important. It's great you brought this up in this meeting. Let's try and put some time aside for that. And it's very difficult. So I think probably the only thing that they could do is bite size. The tabletop exercises are fine. You could do that yourself, but it's finding the time and getting people herded together, especially in a multicultural society where you've got a lot of people who don't actually understand why this is necessary, and then trying to bring them into this one single room where you can discuss this, plan it out, and that's
yep.
very difficult.
You know, we do a lot of these, as you know, tabletop exercises for a variety of different organizations, and we've only ever run a few what involves kind of like an executive being kidnapped, CEO or whatever it may be, for a multinational. So it's something that, you know, I think it's low down on the concerns of organizations. And again, that goes back to, you know, the country which they're operating in at the time. But anyway, like you mentioned, you know, it all becomes a question of finance, bottom line. And if this is going to cost us time, first of all, for our employees to go through this, you know, that time may be spent elsewhere in terms of, you know, keeping those people producing producing the goods instead of, you know, talking about the what ifs. But obviously tabletop exercises are an extremely important element of preparing an organization in any environment. So good. Last question, and as we start to wrap up here, Charles, it's about situational awareness. So as it relates to security and be it an executive or an employee that's operating in a foreign environment, what is situational awareness?
Well, that's your fact. I would say situational awareness is one of two components for personal safety. So you've got situation awareness and you've got safety procedures and measures. And I actually think that without the situation awareness, it doesn't matter about your safety procedures and measures. They will help. But situation awareness is sort of the cornerstone, I would say, of personal safety. And the classic response, and I'm sure you've heard this from many people, in any form of physical crime that has taken place, that they've experienced, the assailant came out of nowhere.
You know, right.
All of a sudden, I'm walking here, and these guys just jumped out. I mean, from where? So you can see that that person is certainly not aware of their surroundings.
Sure.
And what, you know, so what is situational awareness doing? What does it do? Well, it actually buys you that valuable time with which you're able to assess, decide, and act in a timely fashion. And that's, you know, it's all about buying time. So you can make a decision, sort of, I don't think I'm going to go down this road, I'm going to cross over. Or, in fact, I'm going to hail down a taxi now, I'm not in the area that I should be, and then you jump into a taxi and get out of there. But sometimes some people just don't realize where they are. And indeed, they may think that they're in an area which is relatively safe, but they've misjudged it. The other thing, of course, which is important is, a part of that is the observation.
Yes.
And we used to do an awful lot of training on sort of training them to understand the physical environment, and then secondly, the people. But people differ from culture to culture, you know, in different countries. So they will act differently. And indeed, you know, sort of the gesticulation that you may sort of give, someone will take sort of umbrage that, and that could be a serious sort of, you know, misdemeanor in that country. So you've got to understand the culture. And that's where it takes you back to your original sort of, you know, process of going online and having an understanding of what the cultural issues are. But I would say that attention, perception, you know, how you sort of pay attention to your surroundings, and also your perceptions. I go back to that point I made earlier on, where people are complacent. So the perception from that type of person, you think, it's not a problem at all. And indeed it will be. It doesn't matter how big you are, there's always going to be a problem out there for you.
Yep.
So I would say that situational awareness is a key part of your personal safety.
Yep, yep. Excellent. Excellent way to end this podcast. We really appreciate your time. Do you have any final comments for our listeners, Charles? Or if they want to get a hold of you, how could they contact you for, you know, any questions or concerns they may have about traveling within your region?
Well, of course, the company I work with, Janus Global Operations, based in America, and we are truly global, particularly in the Middle East and Africa. So I look after Sub-Saharan, and if someone wants to get in contact with me, it's charles.skinner@janusgo.com. That's the easiest way, because I have a number of phone numbers, so it's
right.
Difficult to track me down which one I'm on.
Yeah. Three of them turned off and one on at any one time, I suppose, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. So, well, yeah, email to me today.
Okay, and we'll add that into the show notes as well. So thanks again for your time again today, Charles, and have a lovely evening, afternoon there in Nigeria, and we'll chat to you again soon.
Well, thank you very much, Lee. Absolute pleasure. Take care. Look forward to seeing you sometime in the near future.
Yep.
Bye-bye.
Thanks. Bye. That's it for episode 34 of the PreparedX podcast. We currently have a travel security e-learning course available, and it's I think it's a 50% off currently if you go to preparedx.net, and if you look under the products and services menu, you'll see e-learning courses, and there's the travel courses within there, and it's currently 50% off. So if you're interested in learning about all things to do with travel security, go to preparedx.net and look under the products and services menu, and you'll find the e-learning course there. That's all for now. Thanks and goodbye.